great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. And you know what? It's a Wednesday. And you know what we do on a Wednesday? We talk about the outdoors and the environment. And we're going to be doing that today to begin the show with Mark Parman. He is the author of a new book of essays called Among the Aspen, Northwoods Grouse and Woodcock Hunting. He shares his stories from the woods and his observations about traditions, about public lands, and a whole lot more. And you know what? You don't have to be a hunter to enjoy his book. And I'm sure you're going to enjoy listening to him as we visit with him today. And you can join in as well, of course. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear your stories from the woods. Maybe you have a particularly memorable experience you want to share. What is it, if you're a hunter, what is it about this kind of hunting that appeals to you? Again, the number 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Or you can post your photos, your outdoor photos, or your questions on our Ideas Network Facebook page. And Mark Parman with us by phone. Mark, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks for having me.
You know, of all of the game birds, the bird I most enjoy eating is the grouse. And I don't know if that is what attracted you to grouse hunting to begin with. What is it about grouse and hunting that keeps you coming back for more?
Well, they definitely taste good. I can't think of an upland bird that I'd rather eat. But there's a lot of factors for me. I love to be in the woods with my dogs, and I like to watch them work. It's a beautiful time of year to be in the woods. And I think bird hunting takes you in places you never go, doing other activities. Like I cross-country ski, I mountain bike, but I never go off into the woods like I do when I'm hunting.
Yeah, especially grouse. Because you're in some miserable conditions within a wood sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes if you're down in the tag alders, mucking around there, it can be, even in the popple, you're pulling your way through that.
Well, let's talk about this book specifically. What are your readers going to find inside?
Well, originally the working title had culverts in it, and I organized it around each of the essays is based on a culvert where I hunt. So I guess I call them braided essays. They're essays with ideas in it that are grounded in some of the culverts that I hunt.
Yeah. And for culverts, I think many of our listeners are familiar with culverts, the term. Because Scott Craven comes on sometimes and talks about culverts. But for those who are, what do you mean when you say a culvert? Because culvert can imply different things to different people.
Yeah, I think with UW Press, they thought espionage was going to be the first thing on people's minds, so they wanted to go with a different title. But culvert is a place where the game hides and lurks, basically. So, but I think with the grouse hunters, it's generally used as a specific place where they hunt, and they often get names. And I can tell my wife I'm going to go hunt, such and such, and she knows exactly where I'm going.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And of course, aspen comes to the fore a lot in your book. As a matter of fact, it's in your title, Among the Aspen, and that tree finds itself as a centerpiece in the story in many ways. Talk about the importance, I should say, of the aspen to the bird hunter.
Well, I think it's, at least in the Upper Great Lakes, it's the most important food source and cover for grouse, so that's where they're going to be. They're never far from aspen. For instance, this past winter when the snow is 2.5-3 feet deep, that's their only food source. There's not aspen around, I tend not to hunt in a specific place if there's not that tree, because it's so important to them.
Yeah. Well, it does seem to be the Aspen seems to be pretty important for you in maybe ways other than just finding grouse.
Yeah, I mean, I think aspen is a beautiful tree. You know, the quaking aspen with the, you know, the leaves that turn golden and make that quaking noise. It's, I mean, you can see an aspen patch if you're, you know, above it or away from it just by the color of the leaves, you know, as opposed to maples or oaks. But yeah, it has its own beauty.
And it has its own sound too.
Yeah.
When the wind is, it was going through the aspen.
Yeah, I don't know. What is it, a tinkling? I think tinkling.
Tinkling is, it's close. You know it when you hear it. Not necessarily the easiest thing to describe, for sure. Well, you mentioned dogs, and I want you to talk a little bit about your two dogs, Fergus and Jenkins. When I saw those titles, I thought, oh, Fergus and Jenkins, and you actually write about that in the book.
Yeah, I had Fergus is older, and we had him first. He's the dog on the cover. And a friend of mine named Phil Costigan, who we grew up together in Iowa, playing baseball, was up hunting with me, and he says, and he knew we were getting another dog, and he says, you should name the next dog Jenkins. And I go, Jenkins? And he goes, yeah, Ferguson Jenkins. And immediately the baseball reference came up. So,
yeah, he was a great pitcher for the Cubs. I'm dating myself, quite a long way back, but it was a great pitcher.
Yeah.
Well, what is it about, and I've hunted with dogs and without dogs, and it's always a lot more fun to hunt with dogs, but what is it about dogs that adds to the hunting experience?
Well, obviously, with the pointing dog, if it's trained right, it makes it a lot easier, where you have a dog saying, you know, that's right there, go flush it, at least for me, because I sort of wander around the woods waiting for my dogs to point, and then I pay attention, as opposed to a flushing dog where it seems like you have to be keyed up all the time. But there's something about working dogs and the intensity and focus that, I mean, it never ceases to amaze me when the dog goes on point. And, you know, how do they do that? And it just, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. What you wonder, what is it? I mean, and it's inborn. You know?
Yeah, I think it needs to be nurtured. In fact, we had the dogs out yesterday, and Jenkins pointed one, and then Fergus, they had a bird downwind, and he just ran right over the top of it, went chasing it away. I said, "How old are you? How old have you done this?"
Well, they have you write about the sense of smell. It was one of the kind of things that caught my eye in one of your pieces. You think that your dog can tell the difference. The sense of smell is so strong. You think your dog could tell the difference between a brown phase and a gray phase grouse?
I don't know. I can only imagine what they smell, but their sense of smell just stuns me. I've read I forget the author's name, Inside of a Dog. I don't know if you've read those books.
Yeah.
Where she talks about dogs being able to smell time because they know when you're coming home at work at 5 o'clock what it smells like. So we think they can tell time, but it's actually they can smell time. It's uncanny.
And before we get much further, you mentioned woodcock, grouse and woodcock hunting, and you've got some really nice pieces in your book about the woodcock and about, I think, one piece on the sort of mating rituals and so forth. But talk a little about that. Why did they go together?
I think you're referring to the piece, the triangle piece.
Yeah.
It's a little one-acre patch of ground where the woodcock do their mating flight, the males do. But grouse and woodcock overlap their cover. And just about every place. And sometimes you don't know what you're going to get. The dog will go on point, and you're thinking grouse, and a woodcock comes up, which really messes you up. But I think the woodcock just adds another interesting element to the whole upland hunting. And northern Wisconsin.
I really like that triangle piece because you talk about you and your wife watching a male woodcock. Describe that.
Well, this piece, in fact, between the writing of this book, we actually moved up to our cabin where the triangle cover is. So we pretty much walk down there every night. And the male woodcocks will peent. It's a metallic sound. The closest thing I've heard is a nighthawk when they're up cruising for insects. They make this little buzzing sound. And then, Aldo Leopold described it best, they twirl up into the sky and 300 feet high and do this fluty song, and then they drop right back down. And you can stand there because they're so focused on this mating ritual that you can get probably 5 to 10 yards from them. So,
yeah.
If you haven't seen it, I've told all my neighbors, you should go watch this because you're never going to see anything like this.
Well, you do such a nice job of describing it, and I so wanted to be in that triangle with you, watching, with you and your wife, watching that event take place. Let's take some calls here. Tom in Madison has something for us. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
What a fantastic show, as usual, Mr. Mueller and Mr. Feynman. We're well familiar with your work. My wife is a member of the RGS. She is Upland Girl number one on the site, and I think she has been from about the time she first started hunting. A little boom of thunder here on campus. We just love it. We love grouse hunting. I mean, I think I read a passage by somebody once when I was a kid that basically said if you need to hit birds every time you shoot, go hunt pheasants. And we've had so much fun in the North Woods and you know, times when the porcupines weren't exactly our best friend either. But to anybody out there, you know, that is a hunter and has not considered joining the Rough Grouse Society or the Woodcock Society or any of these groups, it really helps. If the numbers help, the census numbers help with you know, these groups being able to go and validate the number of people that do it and just the habitat and clear cutting and stuff. It's a great organization.
Tom, thanks so much for calling. Comment from you, Mark?
Well, I think what Tom said is true about shooting. I mean, you're shooting in, for instance, my relatives, most of them are pheasant hunters from Iowa, and they come up, the first response is, we're going to shoot in that? And it's just so thick. And you shoot trees, you shoot holes in the sky. It's difficult just from that standpoint. So I don't think it's a numbers game, which, you know, one of my essays I wrote about, you're better off pursuing something else if you want to fill your tailgate with birds.
And when they explode out of an air, either ground or out of a tree, I mean, it is the sound is such a rush, startle.
Yeah, I think some people, I mean, it's a sound. I don't think I get too startled at the sound. I know some people really do. I think I more key in on it than get startled. But, yeah, if it's underfoot, you're always going to jump.
You are definitely going to jump, that's for sure. Well, we'll get to Connor and Hartford in just a minute. But here's a reminder. We're talking today with our guest, Mark Parman. He is the author of Among the Aspen, Northwoods Grouse and Woodcock Hunting. Hope you'll join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. You can post some of your photos up there as well. I'm Larry Mueller. Sarah Hopeful, our engineer today, Chris Molina, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here talking with Mark Parman, who is the author of Among the Aspen, Northwoods Grouse and Woodcock Hunting is the subtitle. Questions, comments, and experience to share, I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Let's turn to Connor in Hartford next. Connor, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you, Larry?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind today?
It's kind of a story from a couple years ago. I was out in the spring kind of scouting for coyotes because I do a lot of coyote hunting up near Sorona where my family's got a cabin. And I was back in a big patch of woods. And, of course, I didn't have my compass with me, which was my first mistake. But I got turned around and wasn't real sure of where I was. Which is wont to happen in the woods. And all of a sudden I heard a grouse drumming like they do in the spring there. And I knew there was a really big aspen patch right next to kind of the road that goes through. So I started walking towards that that grouse drumming. Never did see the grouse, but got back out to the road and got back out. Back to my truck.
So the grouse got you back on track.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. Mark, a comment?
Well, I think I've had that experience probably too many times, my wife would say. I'm getting lost in the woods. One of my essays is about I was in Langlade County in the Ackley area, which is a very large, swampish area, and got turned around. Terribly turned around, and the only thing that directed us out was there's this massive telephone tower that we could see and use, and I knew it was right next to Highway 64. 4 hours later, it was.
Well, you can, and even if you have a compass sometimes, Connor, in certain areas of northern Wisconsin, it doesn't work very well because of the metal in the ground. I know I've been in some areas where two or three of us were walking through an area and one person's compass was pointed one direction and the guy 150 feet over, his compass was pointing in a different direction, and it all had to do with the iron in the soil. So there you go. Go ahead.
I've actually lost a compass another time, and I knew there was an east-west county highway, and I could follow the sound of the cars out. But since then, I've started carrying two or sometimes three compasses.
Oh, my goodness. Connor, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, 2-800-642-1234. And, talking about hunting and hunting land, if you're going to hunt grouse and woodcock, you're primarily going to be hunting on public land. I think, 99% of the land that grouse and woodcock hunters in Wisconsin hunt is public land.
Yeah, I don't know what the actual numbers would be, but I don't think I hunted on any private land at all last year. I have a friend who's got a 40 that's all aspen, but it's getting pretty old, so I didn't even go hunt there last year. So for me, it's I spend a lot of time in the county forest around here. It's all public land.
Yeah, and I think in one of your pieces you compare it to a state like Iowa, for example, where there's no comparison in terms of the amount of public land that's available.
Yeah, you have to go to the farmer's door with hat in hand and hope he gives you permission to hunt, and it's not like that in Wisconsin. You just get out a plat book and see where you want to go.
There was some point, I think one of your pieces, you talk about the legislative push in Wisconsin to sell off some of these public lands. Talk about your position on that as an outdoorsman.
Well, it makes me uneasy. I think in America we've had this tradition of millions of acres of public land, so everybody could hunt. You didn't have to buy hunting rights. You could just go out there and use the public resource. So, yeah, I always get nervous when I see the push to sell public lands.
Yeah. Tom in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, appreciate the call.
Yeah, I've got a question. Wild grouse. We're in Madison now. We used to live over by Holman and outside of La Crosse. and I had a flat coat retriever, and we were surrounded by woods and a highway, basically. And one day during December, I heard this noise, and I couldn't figure out where it was coming from. Well, I look up, and sure enough, it's a wild grouse sitting up in the tree right above me. Well, our dog was out there. Well, then the bird flew down to the ground, and the dog walked over by it. So, the dog's mellow. She doesn't chase dogs. I don't hunt birds. So she basically just looked, stopped, and looked at it. Well, this went on for 4 months. This bird would come in, and almost every single day. And if he didn't come in, I would go in the woods, and I would make the sound of a turkey poult, and that peeping sound would draw it or get its attention. And it would come in, and it would follow my dog everywhere. The dog would turn around, and her nose is pointing, a foot away from the bird. The bird's not afraid. It just loves the dog. And this went on, like I said, through the winter, and we got some good pictures. A relative of mine who passed away, his name was Jim Solberg. He used to write articles for the Holman Courier and the Badger Sportsman. And he came out and got some great pictures of me with the dog and the grouse. And my question is, how is this common to have wild grouse like that? I never heard of any other birds doing that.
And Mark, I think you've got at least one chapter in your book where you kind of address that.
Well, I think I've seen dozens of pictures on the internet of birds, riding on ATVs. I had a friend who was a UPS driver who would go to one of his package deliveries over near Shawano, and a grouse would come out of the woods and greet his brown truck. He always thought maybe the bird thought it was a giant grouse. But I think there's a lot of stories about almost domesticated grouse. But I think you get varieties. You get birds that are not very wary of humans, and you get some that are incredibly wary of humans.
And the ones that are not wary sometimes may not last long. I can remember somebody calling in a show one time and saying when he would mow his lawn, he had a riding lawnmower, a grouse would come out and jump up on his lawnmower and ride around on the lawnmower with him.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something about, riding on ATVs. It's almost, I don't know if that it's the sound, but I've seen many, many photos of them wanting to get on ATVs and ride on ATVs. So,
well, Tom, thanks a lot. That was a great story about your grouse and the dog. I loved it. Thank you. Rolf and Hayward emailed, the woodcock here in Hayward, he says, are one of the real harbingers of spring, and along with the beauty of grouse, it's the main reason I don't hunt birds. He says, too beautiful in flight and in calls to take away. I do still hunt whitetails, but there's something inherent in the beauty of birds that keeps me from hunting and killing them. Comment on that.
Well, I think that's a difficult question to answer, and maybe we all have to answer it individually. I know it seems the older I get, the fewer birds I want to shoot, but I think the answer to more birds is better cover. If we supply the cover, we're going to have, I think, healthy bird populations. But I understand, particularly with a woodcock, I find myself having more and more difficulty shooting woodcock than I do grouse.
Yeah. Thanks, Ralph, for that email. Appreciate it. And you can join in, too, by the way, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. You're very clear in the book, and it's kind of going along with what we've just been talking about, that this kind of hunting isn't as glamorous or romantic as it can be made out in some literature. And yet for all the difficulties and rough patches, you keep coming back for more. What keeps you going?
I don't know. One of my essays that I wrote, I think I was reading old English essayist William Hazlitt, who's kind of a contrarian. I thought I should write an essay against grouse hunting. So I wrote about all the difficulties. And one of the anecdotes I had, and I just would walked out of the woods, and I'd fallen in a creek and I was soaking wet, and a guy drove by and said, I just had 9 wolves on my game cam. And he said, I'm not trying to keep you out of here, you know, this cover, scare you away. But there, yeah, there's some difficulties with the sport. But I think for me, I want to participate in the whole process of, I guess I consider myself a predator, and want to be part of, for lack of better words, nature. I said, more than anything, that's what keeps me coming back.
Yeah, it's just the spending time in the outdoors. And just to go along with that, I think JJ in Door County has something to add in a way. JJ, hi, thanks for calling.
Hey, good morning. Great show today. And I just want to say, you know, I'm 26, and I have been very fortunate enough to have my father introduce me to the sport of hunting from a young age, you know, being a young boy going up the duck blind on Little Sturgeon Bay and then having the opportunity to go into the deer stand. And I think as sportsmen and women, you know, we kind of have kind of pass it along to the next generation. You know, we all love the outdoors so much. And kids nowadays, they're just so bombarded, you know, their iPhones, their tablets. There's so many distractions. And if you can just get them outside, like, you know, my father did for me, you know, a lot of those values that I learned through hunting, they go across the entire spectrum of my life. So great show today, and I'll let the guests pick up from there.
All right, JJ, thanks a lot for calling. Comments on that, Mark?
Well, I think JJ's got a good point. One of my essays I wrote about media and how even my book mediates the experience of hunting, and, you know, stop reading my book and go out and actually do it with my words. But I think there is a serious, and I think a lot of the game agencies and conservation groups are worried about the lack of youth that are wanting to hunt, and even other activities that are outdoors, not just hunting, but skiing and running and hiking. And I think that's maybe an indictment on our society that we're moving away from what I think is important, and that's being out in nature and learning from it and participating in it.
Yeah. Here's on a whole different tack, we've got an email from Jim, and he says, there's no better tasting bird than the grouse. I've tried preparing woodcock several times, and I can barely stomach the taste. What's an edible recipe for woodcock?
Well, my wife really likes to make rumaki with ours, which is, and of course, when you add bacon to anything, it's good. But they're marinated in a soy-based marinade, and then they're wrapped around an almond date paste, and then wrapped around a piece of bacon and broiled. So that's my absolute favorite way to eat woodcock. But I like to eat them, you know, just on the grill.
Well,
you have to cook them. I mean, it's wild game, so you're going to dry it out. So you have to cook it rare.
Yeah, actually, I think you're absolutely right on that. And that's a good. You're making me hungry. That's a good sounding recipe. We have, another email here from Pete in Reedsburg. When I was a kid, my father and I were avid grouse hunters, except during the 9-day gun deer season. He'd say, it's not safe. We don't have a deer season. We have what seems like a dozen deer seasons, and this has affected my grouse hunting in a bad way. I wonder if, he wonders if you have any similar feelings, or do you think that he's being too cautious for his own good?
No, I don't. I don't take my dogs in the woods in the 9-day gun deer season. In my previous book, I wrote an essay called Black Friday, which is the Friday before gun deer season, which at the time I wrote it, you couldn't be in the woods with a gun, so you were actually literally banned from grouse hunting the day before gun deer season. So it was, 10 days you couldn't hunt in the woods. But the DNR has since changed that. Last, you know, I was like, wow, I can hunt on Black Friday. So I was quite excited.
And it's an interesting time to be in the woods. It's probably for many hunters, it might, if they don't hunt grouse, it's their one experience with grouse. And there's there's nothing like walking out to a deer stand in the dark in the morning and flushing a grouse when you're thinking about deer hunting. Or, as happened to me once, I was sitting up in my tree stand, and one flew up into the tree from not far away and practically scared me out of the stand when it flew in, to be perfectly honest. It was pretty dark yet.
Yeah, you typically see way more grouse during the gun deer season if you're a grouse. During the normal season when you're out there hunting them. So.
Oh, man. So what's your favorite piece among all the pieces that you have in your book?
Somebody else asked me that question, and I don't know if I can answer that. Maybe the piece called Redemption, which is a piece about Fergus, who could not point. He bumped woodcock after woodcock, and I was done for the day. I'd gotten so mad at him, we were just going to go home. And I finally tried one more spot, and then he actually pointed a grouse there for me and redeemed himself. I like that piece, but I think that's just my personal subjective feelings.
Yeah, I had some good feelings, and it felt like I had read this piece before. It was one of your first chapters, or maybe even your first chapter. You called it Ben and Jerry.
Yeah, Ben and Jerry were, and I don't know who they were. Those are made up names. A couple of road hunters that I ran into years ago. I think that's the piece you're referring to.
Yeah.
June Road.
It was an interesting piece for me because I don't know, just because I've run into people too in the North Woods. And wondered about them, and some that I've run into over the years, one year after the next, you might see the same, you know, for example, during deer hunting, you might see the same people in sort of the same areas every year in the Shawamigan National Forest.
Yeah, and I think what happens, too, is we form stereotypes of people and their behavior, and if they're not hunting exactly the way we are, we tend to... hold that in an unfavorable light. So I think I learned a lot from that experience that my way of doing it was not the right way of doing it. There are many ways to do it.
We had another email question from someone. I've heard during a flush, the person asks, that a grouse will drop from their perch without flapping their wings in order to gain speed before a flush and takeoff. And wonders if you've ever observed that or if you think that's true or not.
Well, I think when they're in, they do fly up in trees, particularly younger birds, because they think they're escaping a ground predator like a human or a dog, so they'll flush from even a point up into a tree. But it seems my experience is some of them will actually dive out of trees, particularly when they're high, but then other times if they're lower, they literally jump in the air. So if you get a bird in a tree, it's a if you're going to take a shot at it, it's a difficult shot because when it comes out of that tree, you don't know where it's going to go.
No, you really don't. Well, this has been a lot of fun. How's the book doing, by the way? It's just out now, isn't it?
Yeah, it came out in the middle of April. I had a friend ask me the other day how the sales were, and I couldn't answer that question because I don't have any numbers. At the end of the year, I'll get a statement from UW Press. So
they're a good press to work with.
Yeah, they've been a good publisher for me.
Yeah, are you doing any readings or do you have any invites or things of that nature out?
Yeah, I've got a couple. I'm in cable right now. I'm going to do one for the library and the Redberry bookstore here in town.
And when is that?
They haven't scheduled it. They're thinking late August.
Okay.
And I have one for the Rhinelander Public Library in September. And I want to say that's September 30th, but I'm not sure on that date either.
Well, I tell you what, it's been a lot of fun talking with you, Mark. I really appreciate it. And I enjoyed your book a lot. And thanks so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, Mark Parman, our guest today as we talked with him about his book. It's called Among the Aspen. The subtitle is Northwoods Grouse and Woodcock Hunting, and it's University of Wisconsin Press, and your local bookstore for sure is going to have some, be able to get you a copy of that book. Well, coming up, we're going to talk about, we're going to continue to talk about birds, as a matter of fact, with our next guest, and it's kind of a cool one because it's going to give you a guide to identifying birds in 12 steps. They'll give you 12 steps and you'll be able to maybe become a partial expert if you follow all the rules in the book about identifying a particular bird. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network.